May I please the court?
You may proceed.
I hope to discuss this morning why Section 577.037 provides my client with a clear, unequivocal, and specific right to a dismissal with prejudice, and how the respondent abused its discretion when it denied my client's motion to dismiss without hearing any evidence of an exception at that hearing. If you look to the plain language of the statute, it provides that any charge of driving while intoxicated shall be dismissed with prejudice if a chemical analysis of the defendant's blood demonstrates that it contains less than 0.08% of alcohol, unless one or more of three evidentiary exceptions cause the court to find a dismissal unwarranted. The use of the word shall there creates a mandatory action by the trial court. And if you look to the State versus Mignon case, the Western District examined the specific language at issue today, where the court found that the legislator's intent was actually for the intent in creating Section 577.037 was to provide a criminal defendant with a pretrial procedure for a dismissal under these circumstances.
Couldn't you say the same thing about self-defense then? The self-defense statute says that the if someone acts in self-defense, the use of force, then it shall be a defense to the criminal prosecution. So it should be a defense from even being prosecuted. So would your client, if you had a client who was charged with assault, claim self-defense, would you be able to bring a pretrial motion to dismiss and then require the state to present evidence that it wasn't self-defense?
I believe that the specific language that says that the charge shall be dismissed with prejudice is distinctive from that statute. And also, if you look at the Mignon case, I believe that it's pretty clear about what at least they interpreted the legislative intent to be.
Yeah, and that's the question. What is it in the statute, in the language of the statute, that requires the court to hold an evidentiary hearing prior to trial and to make this determination based on that hearing?
It would be the language that says that it shall be dismissed with prejudice unless, you know, one of the considerations causes the court to find a dismissal unwarranted. That language, coupled with the analysis in State versus Mignon, I think makes it clear that there really the statute would be redundant if there was no pretrial motion to dismiss hearing.
But here, I thought your argument was also, even if the court was not required to hold a pretrial hearing, the court chose to do so but took no evidence.
That's correct.
So even if the court could have waited, the court did not do so.
That's exactly correct. And the fact that, yes, there was a hearing held, there was no evidence presented.
Did you present evidence?
I did not.
And how is this even teed up then? So what evidence was before the court that your client blew before the legal limit?
So according to Mignon, I don't have to put on any evidence. That's specifically stated in that case.
What's the basis for establishing that your client blew below the legal limit?
It would be the search warrant and the chemical analysis attached as an
but
exhibit.
But did anybody offer either of those into evidence?
That was not offered into evidence, but that was pursuant to the Mignon opinion, which says I don't have to.
Well, if Mignon were binding, you wouldn't be here. The question is whether Mignon is correct. And what language in the statute says that a hearing in which no evidence is adduced by any party is a basis on which the statute allows you to dismiss the charge?
It would be the language that says that considerations must cause the court to find a dismissal unwarranted. There was nothing that could have caused the court to find a dismissal unwarranted because no evidence was adduced.
Do you agree with me that under 2404 that the trial court could have just reserved ruling on the judgment till after trial?
They could have, but they didn't.
I understand. I'm just trying to see what you agree and disagree with about this case. what if the state would have put on evidence, one of the exceptions, and the trial court then said, you know, I'm just going to let it go to trial. I can't decide.
If the court wasn't convinced.
In other words, what if the court thought that it was that it was sufficiently contested to let the issue go to trial, much like if this was interpreted to be like the civil version of a summary judgment, and otherwise required the state to put on some evidence, but didn't necessarily require them to meet their burden of persuasion.
Well, I'd argue that the purpose of the statute is to do this at a pretrial hearing and to avoid going to trial on an unnecessary issue.
I think, assume for sake of argument that I agree with you. What if that happens and the trial court just says, well, this is just one of those cases where it's close and ought to go to the jury?
Well, it would explain that the burden is on the state and that.
What is that burden, though? Is that beyond a reasonable doubt at that point in time, or is it just preponderance?
The burden would be to cause the court to find a dismissal unwarranted, which, according to the statute, would be just pretty much just produce a certain amount of evidence. I mean, there's a lot of discretion with the trial court, but when there was no evidence adduced, I don't believe that burden could, there's no way that it could have been met.
What does the record show us as to why no evidence was adduced?
I can't answer that. The record shows that there was a motion and a notice of that hearing was set, a hearing was held, and no evidence was adduced, and that the motion was denied. Specifically why no evidence was adduced, I'm not entirely sure, but these arguments were all raised at the trial court and responded.
And the court chose to decide that on the merits and deny it, not to hold it in abeyance or to say he would take it under advisement?
A hearing was held. There was no indication that this was being taken under advisement or that they were deferring ruling. The state and defense counsel did not request a continuance.
Did you ask for a evidentiary hearing?
I scheduled it for hearing. I assume that that's what that would mean.
You said under Mignon that it's the state's burden to show that dismissal's unwarranted.
Correct. And they do that by providing evidence of one of those three exceptions enumerated in the statute. And in this case, that did not happen. I also think if you look to respondent argues that this statute does not provide a defendant with a right to a pretrial evidentiary hearing. However, you know, before I can even address the merits of that argument.
Let me ask you this. The statute talks about, in regard to those two exceptions, the statute says there is evidence that. There is evidence that.
Correct.
Doesn't that suggest that the state just has to present some evidence but not convince the trial court?
I think if
in other words, by any burden of proof.
I think that's correct. Had they provided evidence, I think it's discretionary with the trial court. And before I can address the argument regarding the fact that this doesn't provide a defendant with the right to a pretrial evidentiary hearing, it's important to point out that the respondent has conceded that the trial court may hold a pretrial hearing on this issue. And that a hearing on this issue was held. So I think that argument almost becomes moot. And then to address the merits of it, I would say that's inconsistent with the analysis in Mignon and also with the with Rule 2404B4, which provides that, and this is talking about motions to dismiss in a criminal case, the motion shall be heard and determined before trial on application of the state or the defendant unless the court orders that the hearing and determination thereof be deferred until the trial. Here in this case, my client's motion to dismiss was heard, argued, and denied, and at no time did the respondent suggest that it was deferring to hear the motion until trial, nor did the state request any type of continuance.
If you didn't bring this writ action and the case went to trial and your client was convicted, wouldn't you have the right to appeal?
I would have a right to an appeal.
And so why is this an appropriate action for a writ? Why don't we wait to see what happens and see if there is evidence presented at the trial? And then even if it was, you could bring on appeal that it should have been dealt with at the pretrial hearing instead of at trial.
But I just think the fact that there was no evidence adduced is very dispositive of this issue. If you look to Rule 2404B1 provides that any defense or objection which is capable of determination without trial, the general issue may be raised before trial by motion. I think the entire purpose of this statute is to prevent unnecessary trials. I understand your point about there being a right to an appeal, and a motion to dismiss is something that could be raised on appeal. It just seems that if this would be the appropriate remedy, because as a matter of law, the respondent did abuse its discretion.
And I get your point that you think the statute's different, but the concern is that you could make the same argument for self-defense, duress, entrapment, all those defenses that would entitle a case to be dismissed. And does that mean that you have to deal with those matters pretrial?
I don't think those issues have the Mignon case in support, which is pretty clear about.
Well, they don't have a state statute that authorizes a particular motion to dismiss based on those grounds either, does it?
I'm sorry.
There's not a specific statute that deals with a proceeding with those types of affirmative defenses.
That's correct, Your Honor. This is a specific statute for those issues.
What about following it up with Judge Powell's question? If the court did defer ruling, which everybody agrees the court could do, and you preserve this issue all the way through trial, if it got to appeal, would the issue be what the record was at this hearing, or would it be like a motion to suppress where the state would get a second bite of the apple and be able to use the evidence that they presented at the motion to suppress and at trial to support their case?
It would be the latter, Your Honor, and so that would be a substantial benefit to the state for an issue that could be resolved by this court prior to sustaining an unnecessary trial.
But if you argued on appeal that it should have been dealt with at the pretrial conference and the court erred by not hearing evidence and we agreed with you on appeal, wouldn't the appropriate remedy be dismissal?
Well, I think the point would be the standard, the evidence that could be considered on that appeal would be different than what would be.
It wouldn't be abuse of discretion then. It would be whether or not the court erred because you preserved the error.
Well, I believe they'd be able to consider the evidence that was adduced at trial.
It would depend if we treated it like a motion to suppress where you considered the trial evidence too, or we found that you didn't consider that.
Well, I think the hypothetical started out that the judge deferred decision, that there was no pretrial evidentiary hearing. The judge under Rule 24-4 deferred it until trial, and therefore that is the only record source of evidence. Was that your understanding? I thought that's what we were talking about. If this judge had not heard and denied the motion, but instead had said, "I'm going to defer this matter till trial,"
and heard no evidence at all. My understanding was that he had heard that the court would hear evidence and then defer ruling on that motion until trial.
Right. Judge Wilson properly understood my hypothetical.
I'm sorry, I didn't. That was my
opinion. I thought maybe you did. I thought your answer assumed that the trial judge deferred and that there was evidence and that evidence would be used against your client. So
exactly, and so there would be no evidence. They would be able to rely on evidence.
Whatever statutory benefit there would be wouldn't exist at that time because the trial court had specifically deferred ruling.
Right. It seems to me you're arguing that this statute, in effect, gives you a right to a preliminary hearing on every DUI, except that the judge, by standing order, can say, "I defer all such motions till trial," and do away with whatever benefit you perceive the statute provides. Am I wrong?
Well, it wouldn't be every trial. It would only be cases in which someone has proof of a chemical analysis below a 0.08.
Our rule does govern, so you would just be saying our rule provides they can defer it, and the statute doesn't negate our rule.
The statute doesn't provide anything about deferring a ruling until trial. That's something in a...
Well, it's because it doesn't say anything about having a pretrial hearing either. I mean, it's a little bit of a standoff on that issue.
Right.
The statute does say you have a right not to be acquitted for that, but that they have the charge dismissed. And I assume that's why you felt it talks about a motion to dismiss the charge.
Correct.
Not that it's like self-defense, a basis for acquittal.
Correct.
Thank you for responding to the court's questions. You'll have your full time on rebuttal.
May it please the court. The writ in this case should be quashed for two reasons. The first being that relator does have the ability to appeal in the event that he was convicted. And under Rule 84.22, mandamus is not appropriate when somebody still has alternative remedies. In the particular case, obviously, in the event that he were convicted of the DWI, he could appeal that issue to the appellate court and hear if that situation arose. Additionally, there is nothing that is preventing him from petitioning the trial court to renew his motion. And I disagree with Mr. Cicirelli's assessment of what happened at the trial court level. And under the case law that says if they don't provide a transcript, we have to assume that the judge exercises.
Was there a transcript?
There is a transcript, Your Honor. And we have to assume, because that wasn't provided, that the judge properly exercised his discretion. It also creates a presumption that the transcript would be favorable to the judgment and not favorable to the movement.
Are you?
Go ahead. But he dismissed the motion. So if
he overruled the motion.
Yeah, he overruled the motion. So, sorry, not dismissed. He overruled the motion, and therefore he could never have, he didn't defer.
That's correct. He did. And I agree that his choice in denying the motion isn't entirely, that's not clear. But what is clear in the record, in the transcript, is that my argument to the trial court was he's not entitled to a pretrial evidentiary hearing. My argument
ask you about that.
Yes, sir.
What does the statute mean when it says there is evidence that? Doesn't that put the burden on you to present some evidence? Maybe not persuasive evidence, but at least demonstrate that there's some evidence of those exceptions.
I absolutely agree that I have the burden. I have to put on evidence that falls under one of those three subsections in 577.037. But the very first three words of that statute are upon the trial. Upon the trial means at trial, he's entitled to this motion to dismiss if I fail to meet that burden. It's essentially a second hurdle.
Well, the statute says upon the trial when talking about what you have to prove, but it says if the analysis is less than 8/10, then any charge alleging the offense shall be dismissed with prejudice unless one or more of the following considerations cause the court to find a dismissal unwarranted. It doesn't require any delay until trial. Our rule 2404 gives the court the option to do that, but nothing in the statute says you have to have a trial they're saying you file a motion to dismiss during the trial.
Well, and I respectfully disagree when it says upon the trial, and then the statute goes on to talk about prima facie evidence. If the state has, mm-hmm. if there's a .08 or higher, is prima facie evidence, and it talks about when a dismissal is appropriate. Now,
so you're saying you can't consider it prior to trial. You're required to consider it, despite our rule saying motions to dismiss can be brought prior to trial unless the court reserves it for trial.
That is not what I'm saying, and I apologize if I wasn't clear.
So clarify.
I believe under the statute says upon the trial. I think obviously the rule is going to control, which gives the court discretion to defer or to take it up pretrial, because I think 2404B is what controls over the statute. I think the court can choose to take it up pretrial, but under the statute, when I'm talking about it says upon the trial, my point is that it doesn't create a clear and unequivocal right to a pretrial hearing.
But again, upon the trial modifies what evidence can come in subsection 1, but we're talking about subsection 2, right? Which is that talks about the chemical analysis and when you get dismissal. There's no upon the trial in subsection 2. Upon the trial is in subsection 1. Am I correct?
Well, are you looking?
At the most current statute, which is the one you want us to look at.
Yes, I agree with you. I was making sure I was looking at the same statute. And because it's all in the same section, I think all of that applies to upon the trial, particularly when you include the fact that it talks about prima facie evidence. Obviously, the state cannot simply go to the court pretrial and say, I have a 0.08 percent BAC and the defendant be convicted. That's obviously not a logical result.
Yeah, isn't it logical to think that this is there to act as a filter, much like summary judgment, that we're spending our time litigating cases where there is some evidence that requires some factual decisions, and they create a presumption that over a certain limit is intoxication and below a certain limit is not intoxication, and then this specifically sets out the ways that you would normally demonstrate intoxication absent the test. Isn't it rational that the legislature might develop a procedure to ferret out weak cases, if you will, or make sure that cases where there are genuine issues of fact do get tried?
I think absolutely it's rational to believe the legislature may do that, and I think they could have included a provision about there being a requirement for a pretrial evidentiary hearing. I mean, there are issues where the legislature requires the court hold a hearing. For example, releasing somebody from 120-day jurisdiction from the Department of Corrections. If they're going to deny the release, the court has to hold a hearing.
So what does this statute actually add? Because you would have to prove one of these three things beyond a reasonable doubt to convict them anyway. So what is the purpose of creating this presumption of dismissal unless you produce some evidence of these three things? When to win at trial, you have to prove them, but one of them beyond a reasonable doubt anyway.
Well, I don't know that you necessarily have to prove what's contained within those three subsections beyond. I have to prove intoxication beyond a reasonable doubt. This statute is very specific, and to my knowledge, the only criminal statute that tells us specifically what kind of evidence I have to present to the jury. I could, if I had evidence.
It says the court shall dismiss if you don't. So it's not telling you what you have to present to the jury. It's saying you have to show the court you have that evidence or the court will dismiss
it. I apologize. Yes, yeah. I misspoke. But it is specifying what type of evidence the state has to produce, whereas it's possible that the defendant could blow under a .08 and the state could have additional evidence that doesn't fall within one of these three.
What would that be? I can't think of any.
Well, I think, especially in the days of social media, I don't know. I think there's videos that are often admitted into evidence, surveillance video.
Well, wouldn't that fit under other evidence of intoxication from physical observations or witnesses?
I don't know that that would constitute observations. It depends on if I had a witness who observed that. I think
Counsel, you understand our point, though. What purpose is? I think you understand our point, though. Your interpretation really leaves almost no play. None of us can think of any situation in which this would actually have any effect. Even if we could come up with one, why would the legislature have adopted this for some situation none of us can right now think of?
Well, I think it's a safeguard to make sure that prosecutors aren't charging people with under a .08 that we have to have additional evidence. I mean,
right.
Are you suggesting it is setting a standard for making a submissible case?
I think it's, yes, I do think it sets a standard for making a submissible case.
If a submissible case is not met, then the charges should be dismissed.
Correct. Absolutely. I think it's in addition to a motion for judgment of acquittal, which isn't quite as specific, but this also only addresses one element of a DWI. And so the state could put on this evidence, the judge could find that we've put on enough evidence under one of the subsections, and still grant a motion for judgment of acquittal if the state fails to prove that the person was operating the vehicle. Right. So I do think it's a safeguard that people and prosecutors, the state, aren't convincing judges or juries of intoxication without additional evidence.
Let me ask you, suppose he's right and that there is some right to a pretrial determination, at least the option for it under 2404, if by filing the motion you trigger that right. And he notices it up for a hearing. How do we know that the state has the burden of proving one of these three exceptions until somebody proves that the BAC test was less than .08?
I think that's a good question. And
because here we don't, on this record at this time, we don't know. He could have blown a, you know, .9 or 2.5. You know, we don't know what the BAC test showed as far as the evidence at that hearing, because there was none.
Which lends to my argument that this is supposed to be addressed at trial, because at trial, obviously, the state would put on the BAC. I recognize the defense has no burden under this statute, but at trial would be the appropriate time to raise it, because at trial would be when somebody has presented or failed to present evidence of a blood alcohol content at all, which would then make this statute make a lot more sense that we have to have the additional evidence under one of the three subsections. And I want to get back to the issue of the denial of the motion, because I recognize the court doesn't have a transcript. The docket entries show the motion was argued, submitted, and denied. The transcript reflects that the objection by the state at the hearing was exactly what it is here today, that we don't have to put on pretrial evidence. And the court at one point says, those are trial issues, I think, and then denied the motion. So while I recognize it's not a particularly clear record, the judge denied the motion, and the only two arguments were what you're hearing here today, whether the state has to put on evidence pretrial or not. And then he denied the motion. So,
if you both stipulate that you made legal arguments, but that there was no evidence presented by either side, how would the transcript help our resolution?
I think it gives a basis for the court's denying the motion. I think it also shows that the court was agreeing with the state, saying, I think that's an issue for trial. And I think it also shows that nothing in this motion, the fact that it was denied, is preventing them from refiling the motion or petitioning for a rehearing on the motion at trial.
But the court didn't do what 2404 lets them do and wait to hear it at trial. The court denied it.
I believe the transcript shows the intent was to defer it. I think, yes, he denied it, but I think the court can deny the motion if it's not a timely motion. If the court agrees that it's not, doesn't
have... It's untimely to bring it prior to trial, that you want us to hold that affirmatively?
No. I'm saying if the court believes that he could defer it, I think he can deny the motion, especially when he's saying this is an issue for trial. I think he, in effect, deferred the motion. I concede that the docket entry is not clear, or at least doesn't reflect what the transcript reflects. I think I want to address the reliance on State v. Mignone. In that case, the issue before the court was whether or not the court, not whether the court has to hold a pretrial hearing. The issue was whether the state had put on sufficient evidence to overcome 577.037. And simply because the court in that case exercised its discretion under 2404 and chose to hold a pretrial hearing cannot be read to mandate a pretrial evidentiary hearing for all future trial courts. I think the court has the discretion to force an evidentiary hearing, depending on what the state's evidence is possibly giving the defendant essentially two opportunities to try at least one element of the case. If the state's relying on subsections 1 and 3 under 577.037, as we are in this particular case, we have to put on evidence pretrial of the stop, the blood draw, the chemical analysis, somebody, as dictated by Mignone, to testify why that's not reliable because of the time. Then we have to put on all of our other witnesses who are going to testify to observations.
You have to present some evidence. You don't have to prove anything beyond a reasonable doubt, right?
You don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, but it does say substantial evidence when it talks about the portion of witness observations.
Doesn't substantial evidence generally mean some evidence?
Well, I believe
it does. In civil context, it just means some evidence.
And I agree with that, but if the state has to meet this burden, it wouldn't be wise on the state's part to only put on a little bit of its evidence, because what if I just put on one witness for observations and now I lose my motion?
But why isn't that the same as a motion to suppress, or in a civil case, a motion for summary judgment? You got to prove there's a fact issue. I mean, we do that all the time, and that's what the legislature's provided if we so interpret the statute.
Absolutely. I think it differs from a motion to suppress in two reasons. One, a court can defer a motion to suppress to trial. Obviously, if it's a jury trial, that's probably not a wise choice, but it's an option. Additionally, a motion to suppress is a very specific issue at hand. It's whether or not there's a Fourth Amendment violation. It's not requiring the state to put on all of its evidence to show an element of the crime.
And in fact, the legislature in the motion to suppress statute expressly articulates in great detail the pretrial procedure.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment.
Do you think that the Mingione case was wrongly decided in that case, as I recall, the state did what you're suggesting, put on some evidence and lost? In other words, they did put on some evidence and the trial court just said, yeah, you did, but it wasn't enough. Do you think that the Mingione case was wrongly decided in that respect?
I don't know that it was wrongly decided. I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what the evidence.
What if instead of presenting no evidence, you would have presented some evidence in this case, And the judge just said, well, they presented some evidence. Well, I'm going to overrule the motion, even though I don't believe the evidence they presented. They presented some and set it for trial. That's different than Mingione, right? In Mingione, the state presented some evidence, and the trial judge still found against the state.
Correct. And the state appealed the decision.
And lost.
But it was an appeal, right?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
It was an appeal. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, which is still an opportunity for Mr. McCree in this case. If he were convicted, he can appeal the decision.
Right. And I guess my question for you is, do you think that part of Mingione was wrongly decided? In other words, all the state had to do was present some evidence, and they should have been allowed to go to trial. And in that case, they weren't.
I honestly don't know if I think it was wrongly decided or not. My reading of Mingione was that they put on the evidence of the breath test or the blood draw, and then they put on the evidence of the time that had elapsed, but failed to present any evidence as to why that was unreliable. And if the court didn't believe there was evidence to show it was unreliable, I don't think they wrongly decided it.
And that's what Mignon held at the end, yes.
So under these circumstances, the relator still has an opportunity to appeal. He can still petition the trial court to rehear his motion if he so desires. And under the statute and under the rule, there is no clear and unequivocal right to a pretrial hearing. Nowhere in 577.037 does it say you are entitled to a pretrial evidentiary hearing. And absent a clear and unequivocal right, mandamus is inappropriate under these circumstances.
Thank you.
If I may, I'd like to return to the issue regarding the fact that there was no breathalyzer results adduced at the hearing. If you look to the statute, the language is different. The language says that that if a chemical analysis were to demonstrate that there's less than 0.08% of alcohol, which I think that's distinct from the three exceptions, which specifically require evidence or substantial evidence.
But how do you know what the chemical analysis demonstrates until somebody puts that analysis into evidence?
So I think that could be demonstrated the way that it was demonstrated at the trial court, as it was attached as an exhibit to the motion to dismiss that provided the chemical analysis, the certificate analysis that establishes.
Was it attached?
It was attached.
Oh, okay.
And it's attached as an exhibit to the brief and the petition for writ of mandamus.
So if they would have filed the probable cause statement as an attachment to their response in opposition that established one of these, would that be enough?
Well, my point is, that is not evidence. And
you can't have it both ways, okay? I mean, we just heard at length about how a motion to dismiss is decided on the face of the pleadings and not extrinsic evidence, and you stapling evidence to your motion doesn't make it evidence. And if it does for you, then it has to for the state.
Well, I was just referring to the language is different. It says demonstrate rather than specifically saying there must be evidence.
Because if the statute specifically says you can bring a motion to dismiss if the blood alcohol content was less than 0.08, so clearly it intends the court to look at some record to see if it was 0.08. Otherwise, there'd be no point in being in the motion to dismiss if you couldn't look at a record to determine what the blood alcohol content was, and the legislature didn't intend a pointless act.
That's correct. And also, if we look to the Mignone case, it makes it clear that the criminal defendant has no duty to put on any evidence, is specifically what it says.
Does the statute actually utilize the language motion to dismiss?
It does not.
It doesn't contemplate. It says the result should be a dismissal, but doesn't require a motion to dismiss.
It doesn't reference a motion to dismiss. But I think it's pretty clear that the plain language, when it says it shall be dismissed with prejudice unless these considerations cause the court to find a dismissal unwarranted, where these considerations have been interpreted to be, well, they are evidentiary exceptions and have been interpreted as the state's burden.
Is the term dismissal sufficient, or is it consistent with what should happen if the prosecutor fails to make a submissible case?
That's correct, but I don't know how that would be any different from a motion for judgment of acquittal. I think that the statute would be redundant. It would really have no purpose if this wasn't an issue that was taken up pre-trial. The fact to have the trial on a motion to dismiss, which the entire purpose is to prevent an unnecessary trial, where clearly the legislative intent was to.
What language in the statute do you determine the legislature intended to prevent an unnecessary trial?
Just reading the section in whole, it makes it clear that it shall be dismissed unless something causes the court to find a dismissal unwarranted. If this were to be taken to trial on every single one of these issues, I think the statute would have very limited purpose.
Thank you.